You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Welcome to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. Each week, the CEO Series takes you inside the minds and lives of some of Canada, and indeed some of the world's top leaders, to discuss strategy, leadership, and today's pressing organizational issues. And some of the world's top leaders have spent time with us, like Justin Trudeau, Canada's prime minister, though in a couple weeks he may not be. We'll see what goes with the election. Muhammad Yunus, Nobel Peace Prize winner, and Joanne Liu, international president of Doctors Without Borders. This show gives you a thin, well, perhaps not so thin slice of the kind of thoughtful leaders leading some of today's most successful organizations. Today, I'm delighted to be sitting down with Monica Ili, the CEO of the Aboriginal Peoples Television Network, the world's first national Indigenous broadcaster. Monica, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, Carl. So happy to be here with you.
So, Monica, tell us about your early years. Where did you grow up and what did your family do?
Sure. Well, I grew up in Montreal, but I spend most of my time in Odonak. You see, my mom's First Nation, Abenaki, and my dad was Hungarian. And Montreal is not too far from Odonak. It's about an hour and a half on the south shore of Montreal between Sorel and Nicolet. And I would spend all my weekends, my summer vacations, my Christmas holidays, Easter, with my mom's family.
So you're Indigenous. How Hungarian do you feel on occasion? Is that a different reality just because of your life?
It is a different reality. I feel more Indigenous than Hungarian just because I'm close to the Abenaki culture, very close to the Abenaki family. I mean, my mom's family, it was not only my grandmother, it was my grandmother and my great uncles, my aunts, my cousins. I mean, the whole community is like a family, and I was really brought up with the Abenaki ways of doing things and thinking. And on the Hungarian side, well, my dad, I mean, he worked hard in being integrated within the Canadian culture and being within my mom's family. My mom's family kind of adopted my father in a certain way. He left Hungary during the Hungarian Revolution and never went back. So he really made a life for himself here, even though he kept contact with a sister and his mother, but that was about it, his contact to the Hungarian life. And he didn't speak Hungarian to me. Beside of eating goulash and chicken paprikash, I don't really have a big Hungarian upbringing, other than I look like my dad.
Clearly you're a leader today. When did you first see yourself as a leader in your mind? You went, maybe I'm a leader. Was it back in elementary school or high school? Or when did you think, because you were the captain of this or whatever, that maybe I'm a leader?
You know, I've never really thought of it that way. I think what I enjoyed doing is being responsible for something, being the one to help others grow. During one of the summer holidays, I was in Odonak and I was a lifeguard at the pool. I was 16 years old. And at 16 years old, I was responsible for all the kids coming to the pool to swim. And I had to be sure they had a safe environment. And then the water was okay and the surroundings of the pool. And then I felt that they were happy and it made me happy. And that I was like kind of seeing the bigger picture of thing, not just the pool, but everything we could do. So I don't know if that's the first time I thought of it, but I think it's really helping others, trying to be there for others, for them to be kind of, you know, fulfilled in a way.
So what did you study in your studies?
No, it's called Psychosociologie de la Communication. There's no really English term to it, but something close would be social applied sciences. So it was a mix of classes in sociology, psychology, and communications. And I really specialized in research. I really love going through documents, analyzing, connecting the dots.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Monica Ili, CEO of the Aboriginal Peoples Television Network, or you may know it better as APTN. So do you dream in English or French?
It all depends what I dream of.
Okay. So it's who is in the dream,
yes,
or what you're thinking about.
Exactly.
Well, let's not read too much into it, but when do you dream in English? What is it, about business or?
I wouldn't say. I know when I dream about my dad, I speak to him in English because I only spoke English with my dad and French with my mom.
Okay.
So I guess who's in the dream? Yeah.
Okay. But which do you think in?
That's a very good question, Carl. And I guess it all depends if there's emotions involved or not, maybe. And depending of the emotions as well. Sometimes I'll be more comfortable saying something in English and thinking in English. But in other circumstances, French will pop up. It all depends. I think when you're perfectly bilingual, it's like it's automatic. You don't even make the difference in your mind. It just pops up.
But is French more emotional? Like, is that when you kind of, when you use
it? It all depends on the emotion.
So do you, not that you'd ever swear, but if you did swear, it would be in French or English?
In English.
Okay. I'm sorry, but I play hockey here in Montreal, and the French guys swear at you in English to make sure you, and
you
the
understand?
English guys switch to French. Because French swearing doesn't bother me, and so they want to make sure you know you're an idiot. So it's all very charming. So you did your EMBA at McGill HEC. What prompted you to do that?
Well, I was turning 50, and it came to a point that I loved my job, but I was missing something. And a couple of years before, I attended a few classes at HEC, and I was like kind of the eager beaver at the the beginning of the class, asking questions, lifting up the hands, and I was learning something new, and it was so fulfilling, and I really liked that interaction. And so I was looking at different classes I could take on weekends or evenings, and then as I was looking the French newspaper La Presse, I fell upon an ad for the MBA, and I always wanted to do a master's. And I said, I'm going to look further into that. And it says, well, to have the brochure, you have to click here and send your email. I'm like, should I do that? Ah, what the heck? So send the email, got the brochure, and then they contacted me saying, do you have any questions? I go, well, I'm not too sure. I'm looking at it. Da, 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 da. And, they make research on who attends the classes and noticed that I was First Nations. And they said, well, just letting you know that we have a scholarship for First Nations, Indigenous people in general, and you'd be eligible for it. I go, oh, interesting. And, I talked to my partner and my daughter, and I said, well, I think I want to embark in this. I feel that I've got something to learn, and I know that not only me personally I'm going to benefit from this, but APTN as well. I'm going to bring APTN to another level, right? Bringing some new thoughts and new perspectives. So I applied, and it was one of the best decisions I ever made.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and today I'm speaking with Monica Illay, CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network, or you may know it better as APTN. Did people kind of respond to the fact that you were Indigenous? Was that, people knew that, and how did they respond to it, if they knew it?
Well, for sure, when you look at me, you don't know. But when I do present myself, often I present myself in my mom's and native language, in Abenaki. And I often bring, the Abenaki perspective to things. And I notice people really appreciated it. And people have lots of questions. And I'm always open to questions. And I love answering those questions because for me, education is a key element to progression, to, involvement. So I love playing that role and answering those questions.
What was your first job out of university? What was your early career?
That was quite fun, actually. I was a freelancer, and I was hired by an organization that is now called the Centre de Réadaptation WAPAN. So it's a readaptation center for addiction. But specific for French-speaking Indigenous people here in Quebec. And they wanted to include in their format and in their programs Indigenous ways of doing things. So I was hired to go to different French-speaking Indigenous communities and meet with the elders and ask them questions about how to help somebody to heal. How do you help somebody to get better and to see if there's any traditional ways of doing, or how could we include within the center specific indigenous values? It was an amazing project where I met so many people in so many communities. It was very enlightening, and I learned so much about the different values of, you know, indigenous people in general, and especially those here from Quebec. So it was something that brought so much to me.
Well, we think of AA or CAA, you know, or how would it be differently among Aboriginal people? Like, you have AA and the basic principles, ideas. How is it, how do we modify it, or is it modified for Indigenous people, or is it?
Well, what I could say about that is that within the Indigenous realms, there's a big emphasis on the importance of sharing your story and taking the time to speak and for the others to listen. And if you've ever been in an Indigenous surrounding, would it be a meeting, a ceremony, the pacing is slower. We get to the same results, but maybe it takes more time. But there's really this appreciation of the person, of the human being, and that takes the forefront of anything else that happens.
Today, I'm delighted to be speaking with Monica Illy, the CEO of the Aboriginal People Television Network. When we come back, we'll talk more about her career and how she ended up as a CEO at APTN. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
Top-notch insight from proven leaders. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking with Monica Illy, the CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network. How is APTN different from other television channels? What sets it apart?
Well, APTN is the first national independent Indigenous broadcaster in the world. So we're unique in that sense that before us, it didn't exist. And we broadcast in French, in English, and up to 32 different Indigenous languages. So we've got a unique way of programming our schedule, which is quite complicated at times. And the vast majority of our programs are produced, written, and directed by Indigenous people. So you come to APTN, you definitely have Indigenous perspectives. And when you look at our news and current affairs programming, they will cover what's happening, you know, in the world. But, you know, with specific Indigenous perspectives, how those events impacts Indigenous peoples and whatnot. So that's what makes it different.
So how far does it go back? When did it start?
September 1st, 1999.
Well, that's very specific.
very proud of that date, Carl, because for the first time in history, Indigenous people saw themselves in front, because before, let's face it, they were quite invisible. So for the first time, they saw themselves and they shared their stories they wanted to share, and they were able to control their sound, their image. So yes, that date is very important to us.
How did it get, like, great result back in 1999, but give us a little bit of the history where, I mean, did it take years to get there? Was there one visionary that really pushed it forward? Give us a little bit of the history.
Oh, sure, definitely. So all this started back in 1972.
Okay, that's a long time.
Well, yeah, you'll understand why. All started with the ANIC, which is the first geostationary satellite. And that satellite, what they did is it would rebroadcast images to North America and also everywhere in Canada and up north in Canada. And a lot of Indigenous communities did not see themselves in the image that were presented. And Canada was really at the forefront of telecommunications. And they've noticed that, and they said, we've got a responsibility. And so they helped to put about TVNC, which was Television Northern Canada, which was a television network for Northern Canada. So this Indigenous network said to themselves, well, isn't this fantastic? We've got our network. But now there's missing a big part. What about the Métis and the First Nations people of, you know, of the other parts of Canada? So they applied to the CRTC and they asked for a model that never existed before, which was a mandatory carriage. And the CRTC supported it. And that's how APTN came to life. So APTN is available to every Canadian in Canada who has the cable. And we right now, we've got fixed revenue, which is 35 cents per subscriber per month. And that's the big majority of our revenues.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Monica Illay, CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network, or you may know it better as APTN. So how many viewers do you have? I don't know if you're allowed to talk about that, but...
Well, how many viewers do we have? That's really hard to answer because we're available to over 10 million Canadians. That's the you're available. So you got cable, you've got APTN. Now, who actually watches APTN? Well, to answer that question, I have to give you the Numeris numbers. So if you're not familiar with Numeris is in Canada, this is the company that will say what are actually the people watching and... But those ratings, the samples are in the big cities of Canada, Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver. Sure. But our primary audience are Indigenous people, mostly in rural communities. Numeris don't go and get those. So we have to have those numbers because, you know, television industry is regulated, well, not regulated, but driven, let's say, by ratings. So we get them, but they're not, you know, representative of our actual audience.
Okay. So how did you get involved with APTN? When did you join them?
Well, I joined APTN in 2003. And at that time, the CEO of APTN was Jean LaRose, and he was CEO for 17 years. And he wanted for APTN to be really known as a national broadcaster, and the headquarters was in Winnipeg. So wanted to be sure that producers and digital producers had access to APTN programming staff. So he decided to open offices across Canada. So in Montreal, they would open an office to be close to the Eastern production community. So that's when I started and I saw an opportunity. And for me, it was perfect because I have a background in communication as well as in production. And I felt that APTN would be the perfect place where professionally and also personally, I'd be fulfilled.
So what was your first position? What was your first title?
Oh, it was called Quebec Liaison Officer. So okay. I was doing a bit of everything.
So like, have you actually produced radio shows or television shows rather, or movies, things like that?
Me, I was never been a producer, but okay. I was a researcher, assistant to director. Okay. I directed documentaries. So I know the industry quite well.
Silly question. Have you met any big Hollywood stars in your kind of work? Or is that not relevant?
Big Hollywood stars. Indigenous, like Adam Beach. So.
Okay. No. Well,
Tantu Cardinal.
So how has the pandemic affected APTN's operation, or has it?
Oh, like every organization, we've been affected. But what we wanted to do is make sure that our frontline workers, so our news and current affairs people, our broadcast technologists, that they had a safe environment. So within a few days in early, well, mid-March 2020, you know, more than 90% of the employees are working from home. And so it's still business as usual in that sense with our current affairs and news programming, so our in-house programming. With the independent producers, for sure. I mean, it was hit hard for them. I mean, production stopped, right?
Yeah.
So we had to wait quite a while. And we worked closely with the producers to make sure that because we had fixed revenues, we did suffer, for sure, advertising, a decrease in advertising, and notice that cable subscription are going down, but it's going down in general anyways. But I think it just went quicker because of COVID. We made sure that the independent producers had money to at least to develop further ideas or reconfigure their format to shoot in a more COVID-friendly way, if I could say.
Okay.
But production has started resume since then, but it's taking time to get things back on track.
Was there a dramatic day back in March where you just said, I've got to shut it down, and work in a very different way. Was there a kind of a moment?
I remember the moment exactly. It was March 13th. It was on a Friday. I spent the whole week in Winnipeg, and we had many meetings talking about COVID and seeing what's going to happen. And so we had a plan in place. But things moved so rapidly, and people were getting nervous. And really at APTN, our employees is definitely our priority. And I was at the airport at Winnipeg waiting for my plane back to Montreal. And I was on the phone with the COO. And we decided then, I think it was like at 3 p.m. in the afternoon, Winnipeg time, and said, okay, I go send the email. And everybody that could work from home, well, they should just pack their bags, bring their files, bring their laptops, and they're going to home now. We don't want them in the office Monday. And on Monday, those that need resource equipment will make it work the next week.
Was that kind of your stomach plummeted a bit? Like, was that a big dramatic thing for you to do? Or did you go, we're tough, we're agile, we'll get through this?
No, we're tough, we're good through this, and we're a great team at APTN. We prepped for it the whole week. We knew it was coming. We didn't know it was coming so quickly. And I just started as a CEO then. I was in the position only 3 months when this happened.
What was your job before CEO?
I was the executive director of programming and scheduling, so responsible for everything you saw on APTN.
You were the number two, more or less.
Well, it all depends. I mean, in the broadcast world, you would say that your programming department is your number two because content does drive the network. You're in broadcasting, yes.
So, I have a bunch of CEOs come to class who become CEOs from COO. Mm-hmm. How different is it being CEO? Is it different than being the number two or three?
Well, yeah, for sure. The CEO is that, yeah, you oversee everything. It's the big picture, right? You're the visionary. You're really planning long term. You're not in the day-to-day operations. You have to see beyond that. So for sure, it's a big difference with the job I had before. And also with the COO position, that's the day-to-day operations. So I'm making sure that once again, I'm connecting the dots, right? And I'm the one giving the vision of APTN, where APTN should be in 5-10 years to now, and starting to work on it now to get to that.
We're speaking with Monica Illy, the CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network. Up next, we'll talk about how do you do strategy at APTN. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
Exclusive access to some of the most successful leaders out there. This is the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Monica Illy, CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network. You may know it better as APTN. So you're responsible for strategy. And on the EMBA, we talked about emergent strategy, kind of Mintzberg or Porter, deliberate from the top down. How do you take us inside the sausage making machine, if you would? How do you do strategy at APTN?
Well, I see it as a collaborative effort. I really get all the different departments involved, and I want everybody to say something about it. I'm not the one deciding. I don't see myself as the one saying, you need to do this, you need to do that. I've got a vision of where I think APTN should be. I will share that vision, and I want everybody's input. How do we get to that vision? So I'm a big team player in that sense that I get people to talk. I force sharing if need to, because I think we need those connection, because I want everybody to feel that they own, you know, those decisions, and then we're moving together towards that goal.
So in some ways there's stories that go almost back to Shakespeare or back to Plato. Like, there's human stories. At one level, boy meets girl, overcomes things, they work out in the end, or whatever. But that, you know, that goes back to Adam and Eve, in a sense. But the other, so you're saying is that you're putting it in an Indigenous context, but non-Indigenous people go, this is kind of different, but I get what they're doing. This is one of life's stories. So Indigenous people are quite different from one another.
But sure, Indigenous is a big umbrella term, right?
Yeah, okay.
We use that term to talk about First Nation, Métis, and Inuit. Like, those three groups, completely different. And within one group, within First Nations people, me as an Abenaki, I'm way different as a Haida from BC. You can't compare. We don't have the same language, same traditions, same values and cultures. So, but the term use indigenous or Aboriginal, but you know, we try not to use that term. We try to be more specific when possible. And that's what we're trying to teach people as well, is to be specific when you talk about a community or a nation.
But they've really grown. I mean, APTN has helped different, the Cree understand the Métis and so on, like we understand each other better. One thing they have in common is they've faced racial bias.
History. We share a common history.
So there's something where you go, yeah, we understand colonization. We all went through it. Now, when you talk to blacks or other people of color, is it quite a different story that you hear? There's obviously commonalities.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if I'm equipped to answer about others, but I think what unifies a nation, would it be, you know, indigenous or black, is maybe the common history, right? Because we have those common roots. And you know, our ancestors lived tremendous hardship, and that helps you to grow stronger. And you know, the fact that we're still here and thriving shows how we've overcame and how we see ahead and the future. So I think it's good to understand the past and to acknowledge the past, but we need to see further ahead to see where we're going to go. And I think maybe blacks probably do think the same way as well. I mean, everything they overcame, and they've had lots of tremendously sad and hard times. So I think on that level, there is that commonality.
You're listening to the CO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Monica Ilay, CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network, or you may know it better as APTN. You know, you'd be much more aware of it, but in my world, things like colonization are terms I hear more and more. Obviously, residential schools are big in the news. Is there a sense that Canadians are broadly more aware than 5 or 10 years ago of these issues?
Yes, definitely. And I think that's for the better of the nation. You know, the past few months, talking about the residential schools and the discovery or recovery of those bodies. Mm. It's very hard to talk about this because it affects all of us.
Yeah.
But you do feel that people now are aware and they're listening, and they want to know. They want to know the truth, and I think they're ready to hear the truth. And we don't want people to feel guilty of what happened, because that's not going to solve everything. It's not guilt. We want them to just to say, this happened. Well, what can we do now, and how can we work and be better together?
So something where, how about a couple books Canadians should read as kind of a primer to get thinking about Indigenous issues in a more healthy way?
Oh, there's many books. I mean, geez. Joseph. Bob Joseph.
Yeah, I interviewed him.
Amazing. Now. He did great books. And they're easy.
The 21
things. He did 3 books. Well, he probably did more, but there's 3 that pops to mind. And I mean, just Google him, and it's amazing. And what's great about it, it's an easy read. It's not overcomplicated. You just read it and you understand. You don't have to Google stuff when you read his books. Yeah. And there's another beautiful book. It's called Braiding Sweetgrass as well. And that's a lot about the environment, ecology. It's really the relationship of Indigenous people with the land. A beautiful book.
From talking to a bunch of Indigenous leaders, a couple things strike me. One is the connection to creation that's more profound. Community is typically more important, I think. And there's also matriarchy to some degree. So are some Indigenous nations in Canada matriarchal?
Yeah.
Matriarchal.
Yes, many of them are matriarchal. And when the Indian Act was imposed, it really brought the woman down to a very low level, because before, you know, the women played a complementary role to the men. So they complemented one another. And the women were part of the decision-making process. I mean, they knew that they needed to work together to survive. But with the Indian Act giving the powers to the men and the women being less than nothing, were stripped of everything. To the point that when an indigenous woman, well, first an Indian, that was the term, the Indian woman, like my mom, my mother, when she married my dad, she became a Canadian citizen. So she was no longer under the Indian Act.
Okay.
Right? And my brother and I did not have our status. But when an Indian man married a white woman, she became an Indian, and she became under the Indian Act.
So there was patriarchy, means, very clearly.
But, well, that's the Indian Act. But that also means, if you dig further, is that in a way, the woman was considered as nothing. So for a white woman to become Indian, who cares? She's a woman. And for an Indian woman to leave, well, whatever. It doesn't matter. She brings nothing to the community anyways. But what they forgot is that a lot of the culture, the language, the value comes from the mother. So that carries on to the children, right? So things change now. The law has changed. So my mom was able to gain her status back. My brother and I have our Indian status, my daughter as well. So, and you know, hopefully things are moving and we're regaining. I think Indigenous women, First Nation, Métis, and Inuit women, we're regaining the position we once had. I think there's a revitalization of women, Indigenous leaders. And it's really moving ahead.
We're speaking with Monica Illy, CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network. Up next, we'll talk about whether she's more of an introvert or an extrovert. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series.
They made it, and they're telling you how. You're listening to the CEO Series with Carl Moore on the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
Hello again, I'm Carl Moore from McGill University, and you're listening to the CEO Series. We're speaking today with Monica Illy, CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network. One of the things that's hot in leadership thinking is authentic leadership. You strike me as an authentic leader, but what does an authentic leader mean to Monica?
Well, as I did my EMBA, we talked a lot about authentic leadership, and the EMBA got me to think about my leadership and am I an authentic leader? And for me, an authentic leadership is somebody who is truer than himself, who is self-aware. And I also believe it's somebody that inspire others.
Part of authenticity is that, you know, a generation ago when I worked for IBM, we became IBMers. You could roll me in and roll you out. And they, other than being male and female, they probably couldn't tell the difference, because we dress similar, we would have the same language, and you were a corporate, it's almost like Charlie Chaplin, going back to the 30s of just the cog in the wheel. Where today we don't want the organizational person, we want Monica as a real human being, but not a jerk. So, like, do you share more of what Monica is to your employees than you did 20 years ago?
Oh my God, I'm not the same person on that level than 20 years ago, for sure. And I think what I try to do is be close to the people. I want them to know that I'm there for them before everything, because if it wasn't for the people, there would be no APTN. It's the people that make up APTN. So, and I believe in everything, all the input, I listen, I'm there for them. And I'm like there to support their initiatives too, right? Because they give me information and like, okay, this is where we could bring APTN. How do we get to that? So going back to them, going back to, I was saying earlier, the collaborative effort, collaborative team. That's what I want to do. And I hope I am doing it. I feel I am. Yeah. Maybe you should have to ask my team, but the feedback I get is that they know that I'm there for them.
Z's, the younger generation, your daughter's one, I suspect. Mm-hmm. Are they different to manage and lead than the boomers and the Xers and so on?
So my daughter is 24. And
that's a Z.
And she is a really little entrepreneur. She is fantastic in how she's doing things. She's a graphic designer. She's studying. She's working, doing her graphic designs and the decisions she makes. She's leading. She's fantastic. I was not like that at 24. I was so not like that. I don't know if I'm the one inspired her to being this or it's other things, but I think it's fantastic the way she's doing it. And she's very considerate to other people. So I'm looking at her at 24 and what she's doing so far. And I'm like, oh my God, she's already an authentic leader. I see that in her because I recognize her because I know her quite well. I don't think I was like that at 24. I think at 24, 25, when I was starting, I wanted to be like you saying, like, you need to be like so-and-so. Those were the models. You had to be that and not be yourself. And I think there's a shift that's happening. I think it's quite positive.
You're listening to the CEO Series. I'm Carl Moore from McGill University. And today I'm speaking with Monica Illay, CEO of the Aboriginal People's Television Network, or you may know it better as APTN. A busy life. CEO, you have a husband as well. You have a daughter.
Two stepdaughters.
But when they were younger, like, you know, at a 24-year-old, you're mom, but it's not day-to-day, hour-to-hour, when as opposed to a two-year-old. How do you balance work life, integrate? How do you integrate work and life together like that, particularly when the kids were smaller?
Oh, when they were smaller? Oof, that was tough. I worked lots of hours. It was not easy. I think as I grew older, now I still work lots of hours, but now I take the time for myself because I know for me to be productive, to me to perform, for me to be there for others, I need to be there for myself.
So what do you do? Do you meditate? Do you float above the sofa? Like, what do you do? Go for a run. What do you do to keep that balance?
Quite easy. What I do is every day when I can, around 8 p.m. late at night, I go and have a walk, a run walk. So I walk, I run. And it's at that moment, and I usually do it by myself. I have my music on, and that's a true moment for reflection. So I think back of my day, what I did, what I need to do tomorrow. And sometimes I just take it in and just look at the stars or this beautiful wind, or even if it's raining. And I love doing that. And I need that alone time for me.
So are you more of an introvert or extrovert?
Can I say ambivert, or you don't accept that as an answer?
No, it's fine. It's a word that I'm doing work on. But like the hard wiring, like, do you seek extrovert breaks and do you schmooze people? If you're on a plane, do you talk to the person beside you?
No, not really.
So you're more of recharge, as you talked about, going for a run.
Yes.
And reflecting and thinking about the day.
Yeah, I recharge by myself. I need those moments. I like being alone sometimes.
So you've been working from home. What have you learned about working and leading from home? Because you're on Zoom and that sort of thing, Teams a lot. How have you evolved as a leader during the pandemic?
That's a good question. I don't even know how I was. I can't believe I'm still working from home after a year and a half or so. But it's going good. But now I'm to the point that I need to see the people. I need to go out. I'm starting to feel the pressure myself. So I'm imagining how, you know, everybody might feel, especially the APTN employees. And I feel I need to be there for them. And they need to know that I'm there for them. So I'm going to resume travel and going to see the Toronto team, Vancouver. I spend a whole day with the Montreal team doing a team building activity and starting to, because I think I need that, because Zoom is fine. It's great. We've proven that we could work efficiently from your home setting, but we are social beings and we need those interaction. And I need to see, you know, have this eye contact and feel that we're there together, and feeling that APTN is not only this little computer, it's this TV, but beyond, there's like almost 200 people working and I need to see them.
Do you cook some Indigenous meals at home at all?
No, not really. Occasionally I'll do some bannock, which was the bread, but not really. I wish I could cook beaver more often, but it happened twice, but years ago, I mean, like, many years ago. So no, not really.
When and where are you happiest?
At home. My home being this home here with my family, and my home in Odenak with my mom in the community. Those are my best moments.
Very different homes. Like you know, a nice part of downtown Montreal, you know, a Victorian house.
But you go to Odenak, it's a very different thing, but there's two different worlds that are equally...
They're me, because I, for me, they're both my homes. I can't say Odenak is not my home. It is my home. It's always been my home. So for me, those moments are the best moments.
What is a quote you live by? Is there a quote that people hear from you from time to time?
Vivre le moment présent. So, you know, live the moment.
Be alive to the moment.
Yes, I like taking it in. I think it's important to just enjoy the moment wherever it is, because once it's gone, it's gone. So you really take the time to say, this is what's happening now.
This is the CEO Series. Monica, thank you for joining us today. We'd also like to thank our technical producer, Marco Campagna. Thank you for tuning into the CEO Series. À la prochaine.